Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You're now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today is a special show because I have in the studio right now three members of the Chicago group The Legends, who did that song Something to Remember You By, and I'm excited to get their story. So, first of all, can each of you introduce yourselves?
I'm Byron Taylor.
Curtis McCormick.
Carthy Levy.
And I just want to say before starting the interview that one of the things that got me into collecting Chicago records was your record, because I would go to like thrift stores and look through 45s. And I remember the three records that really got me into kind of the Chicago sound were The Notations, I'm Still Here, The Legends, Red Balloon record, Something to Remember You By, and The Chimes, My Baby's Gone Away. I don't know if you remember that song, but they're like so Chicago sounding that it really is what, because I was just, you know, I wasn't alive when the records were made, and they don't get played on like regular oldies radio, so hearing that really got me into the Chicago sound. So I really appreciate the records you made. So first of all, are all three of you originally from Chicago?
No, I'm originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
How old were you when you moved to Chicago?
17.
Okay. Did you do any singing or music stuff in Pittsburgh?
No.
Okay. And is everyone else here from Chicago?
No, I'm from a small town, Boley, Oklahoma.
Okay. When did you move to Chicago?
I moved to Chicago when I was about 10.
Okay.
And I was down in Forest, Mississippi. I moved up here when I was 5.
Okay. So, I like to keep the story like chronological, like in the order of everything happening. And I guess, so first I'm going to just ask Curtis about some of his history, because there's some stuff happened before The Legends formed. So, Curtis, how'd you get into music originally?
Well, I've always wanted to play guitar, and I think I wanted to play so bad I made my first guitar with a cigar box and a piece of wood and some rubber bands.
How old were you when you did that?
I think I was about 10 and a half then.
Okay. And so did you get good at it?
I got very good.
And did you get a real guitar eventually?
Yeah, my father, he bought me my first guitar. It was a Silvertone. He said, "You learn to play this guitar, son, you'll never starve, and you'll always be able to make money."
Were there certain musicians that inspired you to make music that you really liked? Like, you played their songs?
Yes. Back in the day, I loved the blues. And my father said, if you don't learn to play the blues, you got a hole in your soul. I used to go to guitar down in Jewtown and watch the old men play and carry the equipment around. And they taught me.
Okay. How old were you when you were doing that?
At that particular time, I was about 11.
So did you perform anywhere? Were you in high school performing?
Yes. When I got to high school, I was at Fanger. I performed in the little talent shows. I said, this is what I want to do. And I started, I think the Beatles were out, and I played the song and won in the talent show some of the Beatles songs at that particular time. I think it was Help Me.
Okay. And did you ever play at the clubs in Chicago?
Yes. As I got older and I got with the group, then the guys and gals, that's when I met Michael Jackson and that group there. We were all starting out around about that time.
What was the first group that you sang with?
My first group was The Legends.
Okay.
And from there, I learned a lot from Brian Taylor. I could always sing, but I think he taught me how to hold my pitch. back then. He said, you can sing, but you got to learn to get with the group, man, and hold the pitch.
Okay, so how did the group, the Legends, form, and who were the members originally? There's a question for everybody.
Okay, when it first started out back in 1969, we had a member of our group, he's passed away, Carl McFerrin. He was the lead singer. Well, back in 69, Carl got out the service. I had got out before him and staying down on 34th and Michigan.
Okay.
And Carl and I would get together as a twosome and start singing right out on the corner, like old groups do doo-wops. Him and I started out, and then Carl introduced me to Curtis.
Okay.
And at one time, we called ourselves the Magnificent Three.
Okay.
And then I started telling Kurt and Carl how to hold their note and hold their pitch. Well, from then, Kurt introduced us to Lamar Greer, who okay. later became one of the Legends. And we changed the name, and Kurt introduced us to Lee Dees, who played the bass guitar in the band. And Lee thought of the name The Legends. So we changed the group's name from the Magnificent Three because it had obviously grown. And then we became the Legends.
Did you all stay around 35th in Michigan?
Well, I did. We had an office down there.
Is it Stateway Gardens is right?
No, no. This is down in the city of Chicago, right across from De La Salle Institute.
Okay.
It's a school down there. But before we became the Legends, we had a great opportunity. And Cliff from the Notations, he had did some music with us. We had a record, Trying My Best to Find Her. And we were the Notations. And then Cliff broke off, and because he had thought of that name, the Notations. And he had his group. And so they did their thing, and then we did our thing with Something to Remember You By.
Okay, well, how about I play, since it's the first record you're talking about, I'll play Trying My Best to Find Her, and we can talk more of just the background.
Okay.
So this is the Notations with Trying My Best to Find Her. Okay, that was just the notations with trying my best to find her. So right now in the studio, I have members of the Legends and Notations talking about their stories. So first of all, what was the lineup on that record? Who was singing?
Okay, we had Carl McFerrin. He's no longer with us. He's passed away as the lead singer. Then there was myself, Byron Taylor, Curtis McCormick, Lee Dees, Lamar, on Something to Remember You By.
I'm talking about the Trying My Best to Find Her, the Notations record.
Oh, Trying My Best to Find Her. Cliff Curry, Carl McFerrin, Curtis McCormick, Lee Dees, and myself, Byron Taylor.
So it's pretty much the same group almost as the Legends, except Cliff was singing instead of okay. So originally you were the Notations, originally the Magnificent Three. How'd you meet Cliff, and how'd you become the Notations?
Well, through Carl, I met Curtis McCormick, and then Curtis brought Cliff in, and that's how we met Cliff. He introduced Carl and myself to Cliff.
How did you know Cliff?
I met Cliff. I was one of the main writers at one time at Curtown Records. And we were forming a company then. Curtis Mayfield and Cliff at the particular time was a very outstanding singer. And I knew it then I had to have him, so I brought him on in.
So at that time, Cliff hadn't recorded anything with anyone, and you just recognized his voice and thought it was a good voice.
Yes, I recognized his talent.
So, who came up with the name The Notations?
I think Cliff.
Well, that came later. I came up with that.
Yeah.
Okay, and it was released. That record that we just played was released on a local label called Tad Records. Do any of you remember how you got with the label and who ran the label?
I mean, vaguely, there was a producer. I think his name was Don Zimmerman.
Yes, that's what Gerald Dickerson told me. Because the Contributors of Soul were also on that label.
That's Don Zimmerman. That's it.
He was a white guy.
Yes, he was. Yeah. And there's a story behind that. We were all at 8311 South Racine one day at Curtis' apartment, and previous Johnny Pate, the arranger that had the group The Occasions, had wanted to sign us at ABC Paramount. But he told us, he said, listen, I'm going to be making a move and I want to take you guys with me. He said, but just hold on. Well, 6 months went by and Don Zimmerman came in through Cliff, and we were the Notations, and we were at 8311 South Racine, and Don Zimmerman had the contracts for us to sign, and I told them, I said, let's just wait, and everybody said, sign, come on, sign. And soon as I was the last one to sign my contract, and right after I signed, 10 minutes later, the phone rang, and Johnny Pate wanted to fly us up to New York to sign with MGM, where he had gone from ABC Paramount, but it was too late, and we were with Tad Records.
Mm-hmm. And the MGM wasn't going to buy out the contract or anything like that?
No.
So you had bad luck.
Yeah. The timing was just perfect to be bad.
And just I'm sure you all know this, but just so the listeners know, Johnny Pate is famous as the arranger for the Impressions, and
yes.
He led like the horns and all the sounds like that on the records. So you ended up recording the record. Do you remember what year that record was recorded? I think it was around 69, but I'm not sure.
Yes, it was. It was in the year 69 we recorded Trying My Best to Find Her.
Yes.
And did it get any play in Chicago?
It got some airplay, but at that time the DJs had to be paid to play your record, and they were starting to bleed Don, and he said, look, I can't handle it.
Yeah, that's the story I've heard from a lot of kind of local startup labels, is they put in the money for the recording, pressing the record, they don't realize there was like the payola, and so they can't get their records played.
Right.
So it was too bad that it was a nice record, but it just didn't get a promotion. So what's the story? How did the Notations become a different group and the Legends become a group? What happened?
Well, Carl had this certain style of voice, and when Clarence Johnson came into the picture, he didn't like Cliff's voice, and he liked Carl's voice, and there was some discrepancy because I wanted to stay with Cliff and to keep Cliff's voice in the group, so Clarence asked them to remove me from the group. Well, I gotta tell it like it, keep it real. He asked them to remove me from the group because he saw that I could see through him. It was like transparent foolishness. So Cliff left and Carl became the lead singer, and then eventually I came back in the Legends and I helped write Something to Remember You By, and the Legends stayed together after that. But as we know, Cliff was a very successful
with the Notations.
Yes.
So what's the story? Someone brought in Lamar Greer and then he hooked you up with Clarence Johnson?
Yes.
Yes.
Which one of you knew Lamar? I think you said already.
I knew Lamar.
Okay. Oh yeah, and one thing I forgot to ask about the Tad record is, Curtis, you wrote both sides of the record. You're the writing, you have writing credits on it, right?
Yes.
Had you written songs before?
Yes, I wrote songs for different groups. That's when Curtis Mayfield, he had picked me up as a writer. I wrote for the Symphonics, the Softies. I wrote records that hadn't been for you. You even told me more about my history than I even knew myself about.
But, you know, I collect the 45s, and on all of them, there's this name, Curtis McCormick. I'm like, who's that dude?
I'm glad you did.
I have been looking for you for a while, actually.
I'm glad you found me.
So Lamar came in the group, and Clarence, he was going to produce new material.
That's correct.
Why did you change your name? Oh, to the let did you let Cliff take the name and you changed your
yes,
name?
Yes, yes. That was Cliff's original name. He had came up with it, so I thought it only fitting that he stick with it. And I just hate he took all his talent with him.
So, who came up with the name The Legends?
That was between Lee Dees and William Taylor here.
I think Lee more so deserved credit for the Legends.
Yeah.
Because we were all playing around with different names. And,
sound better than me.
It sounded real good. Yeah. And Lee came up with it and said, well, we took a vote on it.
I won.
So I've always been wondering, what's the story? You spell your name with a D before the G. The Legend, is there some story behind that? Did you decide it was spelled that way?
No, I think that was sort of a misprint, but it just sort of stuck with the name, and we never did try to change it.
It was kind of good because there was a bunch of other groups in other cities that recorded as the Legends, but you're the only one with, like, no one's going to confuse you with any of the other groups.
That's right.
So let me play your first record as the Legends, which was your biggest hit, and then we can talk some more. Okay. So this is the Legends with Something to Remember You By.
Many times before, but made up your mind. If you really must go, love, just leave me something to remember you by.
Just leave me.
That was just the Chicago group, The Legends, with something. Sorry, there's a problem with the mic. That was just the Chicago group, The Legends, with Something to Remember You By. And first of all, do you guys remember what year that came out?
1970.
And do you remember where you recorded it?
Down at 664 North Michigan, about the 41st floor.
did that studio have a name?
I can't remember the name of the studio now, but we were down there.
And did Clarence use that studio a lot?
I remember he used it that night.
Okay.
He recorded it.
Oh, the Notations also recorded that song?
Recorded it at the Crossroads.
Oh, at the same place.
Same studio.
And who wrote that song?
Something to Remember You By was co-written by Curtis McCormick, myself, and really Lee Dees.
Yeah, but all five of your names are in the writing credits?
That's because at that time we were very unselfish and decided to share each and every one with it. Basically the same amount of money together.
Okay. And that record actually got play in Chicago, right?
Big time.
Yeah.
Big time airplay.
Do you remember what happened when it started to get play? Like, did you start touring or what happened?
We start doing a lot of gigs on what that would be called like the Chitlin' Circuit.
Yeah.
Because we did a lot of nightclubs, but basically we didn't get to play in the great big shows. We were often asked to come, but due to mismanagement and flared tempers, we didn't get there.
Okay. The other side of the record is also really good, Gotta Let You Go. The same people wrote that song?
Well, actually, our lead singer, Carl McFerrin, he and I and Curtis had got together one day down on 35th Street and came up with that one.
Okay, and I forgot to ask, so who's singing all the parts on Something to Remember You By?
Well, we each took a different part. Curtis started out. And then I came in with the top part. What's this? Are you leaving? And then Carl came in with the lead. And eventually Lamar Greer came in with the heavy, deep voice. Girl, I know. And
so Carl is the high voice throughout the song?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you guys had a really nice sound on that. Yeah. And it's on a label called Red Balloon, which I guess Clarence Johnson had something to do with it. Do you remember anything about the label?
Well, the label was supposed to be our own label, and we had our own publishing company at the time called Lagonco. We also came up with the idea for Red Balloon. That label was also formed by Curtis McCormick, Lee Dees, myself, and Carl down on when we were at 35th Street in Michigan.
How'd you come up with the idea for Red Balloon?
I don't know. How did you come over here?
I think at the time, I must have busted a balloon, and I said, let's call it Red Balloon.
Wow.
But I think on the record, Clarence put his publishing on the record.
Yes, he put his everything on a lot of stuff.
But you had your own publishing company. It just
well, Algonco Publishing was basically supposed to have belonged to us, our own publishing. I don't know how Clarence wiggled in there, but he did.
But he's the one that pressed the record.
Yes.
He took us and introduced us to a man named Eddie Thomas. And between him and Eddie, they had gotten together and said that they would have the record pressed up.
Okay. And when you recorded that song, were those the A and B side the only two songs you recorded, or did you record everything that you did at that one time?
At that particular time, I think those two were only one at that particular time, wasn't it?
Yeah, we came back later
for the other ones.
Okay, so the B-side, Gotta Let You Go, was really good. And it got released on a Clarence Johnson label with another song called Fear Not. I guess I should play both of them. Let me play Gotta Let You Go, and then we can talk some more. Okay. So this is the Legends with the B-side of Something to Remember You By called Gotta Let You Go. Okay, that was just the excellent flip side to Something to Remember You By. That track was called Gotta Let You Go. And do you guys, did DJs ever flip it over and play that track?
I think a major label picked that. They Gotta Let You Go.
No, it actually was picked up.
With a major label, yeah.
So.
I did.
Yeah. So that record was released three times. The second time it got released on Clarence Johnson's Locket label, and it got released with Fear Not and Gotta Let You Go. And then that was the record that got picked up by the national label.
Right, right.
It was Commonwealth United Records. So, first of all, did it get any play? Did God Let You Go get any play in Chicago?
Yes, it did.
And was on the second release, was Fear Not the A-side or God Let You Go the A-side?
Fear Not was the B-side.
Okay. And that one didn't come out on Red Balloon. It came out on Clarence's Locket label. Just he was controlling everything and pressing everything. Is that the story?
Yeah.
Did you guys ever tour or leave Chicago? You said you did small clubs.
Yeah, we did small clubs at the time, local clubs.
Do you remember some of the places you went?
Like I said, the guys and gals, all the locals.
The Green Bunny,
Glass House, High Chaparral.
So those are Chicago clubs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We did some college circuits.
Yeah, with Herb Kent, we did some college chapters with Herb Kent.
Do you remember what colleges you did?
We went up to Lake Forest to Barrett College, and then we were down at Southern Illinois University.
Okay.
For the Capricorn.
And what were your shows like? Like, first of all, did you guys get suits and everything?
Yes.
Did you have choreography?
Definitely.
And so what types of songs did you do at your shows besides your originals?
Basically, we did a little Smokey from the Miracles. We did some of his songs. And at the time, we had
A Thin Line Between Love and Hate. We did
and,
that.
We did yeah. Archie Bell and the Drills with
yeah.
Tighten Up.
And I forgot to ask this, but when you were forming, was there any specific groups that kind of inspired you?
The Miracles.
Okay.
And the Temptations.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, like I was saying, the second record was Gotta Let You Go and Fear Not. Did you record Fear Not at the same... Did you go later to record Fear Not?
Yes.
But you recorded at the same studio?
Yes.
Do you remember who wrote that track?
Fear Not was Lee and myself.
And did it get... Did that side get any play, or was it just the Gotta Let You Go side that got play?
And Gotta Let You Go got to play.
But the interesting thing about that is, as you were saying, it got picked up by a national record label. Do you know how that happened?
I think, Bob, at the time, they really liked the record, and somebody heard it and picked it up at a major company.
Okay.
Well, actually, the major company picked it up through manipulation of Clarence Johnson.
Okay, so they got him to license the track. Mm-hmm. And the company was a label called Commonwealth United Records. So did you ever get to... So did you know if it got any play anywhere else after it got picked up?
Well, I got a chance to find out it did get played nationally. But back then, I was only interested in the glitter and the glamour.
Okay. So let me play the Fear Not side, because that's a good side too, and then we could talk some more. So this is the Legends with flip of their second record. This is Fear Not.
Walk out of
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show right now. We are in the middle of an interview with the Chicago soul group, The Legends. And that was just their track, Fear Not, which was released as the B-side of a few of the records that came out. So that side didn't really get played in Chicago, did it?
Not too much airplay. Some, but not too much.
Who sings lead on that?
Carl McMahon.
Okay. And that record got released as the B-side of another record, which is called A Fool for You. And you were saying you didn't even know that it came out.
It was called I'm Just a Fool.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But it actually came out also on Red Balloon. But I don't, it looks like on the, I would have brought the label to show you actually. It looks like maybe just Lamar did it because Clarence's name isn't on the record.
Wow.
But I have a recording of it. It's a really good song. It just,
it just
was never distributed pretty much, even though it was pressed. So none of you knew that it even was on vinyl pretty much.
No.
And, I gotta ask just about the Red Balloon label because it's your guys' label. Why do they all say Los Angeles on them?
Well, that was another, underhanded maneuver by Clarence because, we definitely didn't know anything about L.A. until it had been pressed up.
Do you think it actually had anything to do with L.A. or?
I think he used it as a, promotional tactic or a distributor tactic on us.
Okay. So the last record that you guys did was, you said, I'm Just a Fool. On the record it says A Fool for You. Let me play it and then we can talk more.
Okay.
So this is The Legends with their last record, which was pressed but never really distributed. This is A Fool for You.
Baby, pray to leave the home.
Okay, that was just the Legends with, I think the last record they did that was released. That track was called, well, on the record I think it says A Fool for You, but the title was...
Well, A Fool for You, I forgot that we did I'm Just a Fool with a different song from that one. I'm Just a Fool never came out, did it?
No, I don't think so.
So you actually recorded more material?
Yes.
Yes.
Was it just five songs, or do you remember if you recorded even more than that?
We recorded a few more songs, maybe three or four more, that never came out or released.
Do you know, who would have had the tapes for that?
At the time, I guess it would have been Clarence, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just because it would be amazing to hear the unreleased songs. So one thing I didn't ask it is you guys had really tight harmony on all your records. Did you sing in local groups before you joined? How did you end up with that sound?
Okay, in high school, I had extensive training. And I used to sing in a lot of assemblies that we had in school. And so the knowledge that I had learned in school, I passed it on and taught the guys their different notes to hold. And then we came up with our sound.
So how long were you together sort of coming up with your sound before you recorded?
Oh, I would say in a matter of months, because we all had voices, but he trained us in how to keep the harmony. You know, we could all sing, but sometimes you would sing in unison, and he said, "No, you hold this note and stay on this note." And then in the course of it didn't take long at all, because we were all talented, and we just behind that. And then with the bass player, we already, by me playing music at the time, I was the musical director, and so was DDs, and so that had a lot to do with us as our singing career went ahead. Most groups, when they do make it, if you got a guitar player or a keyboard man working along with the group, it's a great access to the group.
Okay, so I didn't ask about that before. Did you have your own band or just a bass player?
Well, Lee Dees and myself, like I said, when I was young playing, when I found out his ability as a bass player, he and I were playing before we even got into the group. We were doing little gigs and different little joints and down to U-Town playing until we got good at it. And then when we got with the group, that made us even better.
So did you guys play instruments when you did shows, or did you...
Yes.
But... Was someone playing the drums, or how did it? You played with the house band?
No, we had a drummer. His name was Tony. I can't remember his last name now, but we had a drummer.
Yes, his name was Tony.
And I believe Tony moved out to Las Vegas, but we had our own band that traveled.
So you were completely self-contained?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. Not a lot of groups were self-contained like that. So how long did the group stay together after the last record got released?
3 years.
Approximately 3 years.
And you were doing shows at that time? Did you ever try to get with another label, or what was the story?
No, we didn't ever try to get with another label, because we wanted to record up on our own label. But with the way things were going and we weren't satisfied, we tried to wait it out to see that if we could just wait the contract out and come back again. But after a certain amount of time went by, I guess each member went a different way.
Yeah, that's the story with a lot of groups I talk to, that they just put in the time and they're not successful, which is very common because it's very hard to become successful. They kind of move on. So when did the group break up? Was it 73, 74?
About 74.
Okay. And did you guys ever record anything else at other studios before you broke up that wasn't released?
We were down at Chess Studio on Michigan around, 23rd, somewhere around there.
Yes, back then, though, I think that's when I got with Curtis Mayfield, Kurt Time Records, and I wrote for Billy Stewart, What Have I Done, and I was doing a lot of freelance writing.
Billy Stewart was on Chess Records?
Yes, he was.
Okay. So... The group had broken up, and I guess, Curtis, you continued to write.
Yes, I did.
So, first of all, when we started the interview, you said you were a writer at Kurtom.
Yes.
Was that the first writing job you had, or did you write for other people before then?
I wrote for other people before then. I had a gift for writing. I just wrote songs, the Symphonics, they were on Kurtom Records, and then the Softies, a group called the Softies. And at the time, whatever group that the producers would bring me, if they needed material, I had the gift to write, so I would write.
Okay. So let me play one of the records you wrote. This is the Softies, and this track is called Two Kinds of Boys. Okay, that was just a song that Curtis McCormick of the Legends wrote. It was a girl group from the west side of Chicago called the Softies. That track was called Two Kinds of Boys. So do you remember who approached you about that? Or?
I think Clarence did.
Okay. And then the one other song that I'm sure you've written more songs that came out, but the one other song that I figured out that you wrote was a group called the Symphonics, and there's an up-tempo side called Guilty and a really nice ballad called When I Grow Old.
Yes, When I Grow Old.
So you wrote that when you were working at Kurtom?
Yes.
Records? Because that's like an early, one of the early records that came out on,
yes,
Kurtom.
Yes.
It's like it's got the black label before they came up with the yellow label.
Right.
So do you remember anything about the Symphonics?
Yes, they were a real good group at the time, and I think what happened right then, they had, back then, groups, they would argue between one another, and then the girlfriends, and a couple of them were married, and then they had girlfriends, and it brought about a lot of animosity in the group.
The girls all want them to quit because they're jealous.
Yes.
So I heard the group was from Morgan Park.
That's correct. Right.
Do you guys remember the names of the members?
Lynn O'Dell.
James Curry. Smitty.
Romy Martin. And that was the group.
Do you know if they did anything else or ever recorded under different names?
No, they never. They never did, and I hate that because at the time, Motown was they had a shot at Motown, but they never made it. They never went.
Like Motown, Motown wanted to sign them after Curtom.
Yes.
Okay. When I Grow Old is a nice record, should I play it?
Yes.
Okay, so this is another record written by Curtis McCormick. This track is called When I Grow Old. Okay, that was just a group called the Symphonics, who were one of the early groups on the Curtom label, and that was written by Curtis McCormick. I was looking at the record today. I think Fred Cash also has writing credits.
Yes.
And it's too bad. That was a really nice record. Did it get any play in Chicago?
No, not really. And that was the record I think it really should have been put out because it was a very nice record.
Yeah, definitely. And I forgot to, I think you might have told me, but I'm not remembering. How did you originally get hooked up with a job at Curtom Records?
Well, Curtis realized my ability as a writer at a young age. He used to come by my mother's house and pick me up. And I learned a lot from Curtis Mayfield myself. He was a great man and a great artist. And my job at Curtom Records was to screen talent. And if a group came out and had any talent, which I still screen talent now, I would go to Curtis, and Curtis would then he would listen to them. He and I and decide whether they were material to be recorded. They were well enough to be recorded.
So how did you get that position originally? Like Curtis just thought you would be good at it.
Yes, he thought I would be real good at it, and like I said, he could see the gift in me at a young age, and he kind of took me under his wing, carried me with him to different artists. That's when I got a chance to meet the Five Stair Steps back then, and by me being a musician, I would back up other different groups.
Like on record or at shows?
At shows.
So your job there wasn't originally songwriter. You were screening talent?
Screening talent and also writing songs.
Did you write anything else that came out on Kurtom?
No, not at Kurtom.
So can you talk a little bit about the screening process? Like, how did groups get to you to hear them, to then pass on to Curtis? Like, how did you find groups?
Well, I would scout out and find different groups. And this group came to me, I never will forget. You remember years ago that song, but I don't think Curtis, he didn't see the talent in like I did. That song, I'm a girl watcher.
Yeah,
watching
the
girls
go
crazy.
The occasion.
They came to me with that song, and they wanted to get with Curtis. And I told Curtis, man, we got a smash here, man. I don't think Curtis felt it like I did, but that tune came out. I heard that tune about, he didn't sign the group up. I think I heard that tune about a little over a month later, and in less than 8 weeks, that tune had sold 2 million copies.
Yeah, it got picked up on ABC.
Yes.
And they were like a white group from the Carolinas, is that right?
Yes.
How did they end up coming to Chicago for you to hear them? Did they just come to Chicago trying to get a record deal?
Yes, they did. And at the time, I was in the studio fiddling around with the guitar. Just sitting in the studio like we here now, messing with the guitar when they walked in. And I heard the tune. Hey, we got a tune here. Who are you? I said, well, I screen talent. And I fell in love with the group. And I brought it to Curtis. I don't think he felt it like, you know, the group like I felt it. But later on down the line, he felt it when they had a $2 million seller.
He felt it too late.
Yeah.
So, how do you remember any other talent that came through that
you
screened?
Yes. He sent me out to the airport to pick up Donnie Hathaway back in the day. And he was another very talented man. And he had just graduated from college out of Washington.
Howard. I think he went to Howard.
Yes, yes.
But he was originally an arranger. Like he arranged.
Yes, he was. Yeah. He didn't even realize. And he and I would go in the studio, and I would sit and listen to this man for hours. I was amazed over his talent. And like I said, I spotted right then that this man would be great. He hadn't even put out any records. And he wound up leaving Kurtom Records. But like I said, I had a gift for spotting talent.
He was originally paired up with June Conquest,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Were you involved in pairing him up? Like a
no,
duo?
I wasn't involved in that.
Any other talent that you remember helping sign the label or that you turned away that ended up being big?
Not at that particular time, no.
How long did you work at Kurtom?
I stayed there. I worked alongside of Cliff for a little while. I stayed with Kurtom Records, and then I eventually got off into gospel.
Okay. So I want to get into what everybody is doing right now. So what music stuff have you guys been doing since the 70s?
Well, right now, myself, Byron Taylor, I pastor church One Way to Christ Ministries along with my wife, Apostle Jeanette Taylor. And we have a record label that I'm about to share with Kurt and Lee called Honor Him Records.
Okay.
And him spelled H-Y-M-N. And I've got a lot of records that I've written and going to co-share with Lee and Curtis, because that's the way it's always been with us. So we're about to release a single now called No Weapon.
And it's all three of you singing, or who's singing on it?
No, I'm singing on it, but I'll have those guys backing me up.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you when it comes out, do you have a website, or how are you going to distribute it?
Yes, our website is eaglesflight3@yahoo.com.
That's your email address.
Yeah, that's my email address.
Okay.
My website, I forgot it right now.
But either way, people could email you to find
mm-hmm,
out.
Mm-hmm.
Any other music stuff you guys are doing now?
Well, like I said, I have this CD that I'm singing on. It's called Ticket to Heaven. And
I definitely am going to play it.
Right.
But our website, again, I know now, is onewaytochristministries.org.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And are you involved with anything besides singing backup on his record? Okay.
Oops.
Are you excited to be back doing some music?
Yeah, because I have come from a musical family.
Okay. Well, I'm going to play the one record that Curtis said he just released. What's it called again?
Ticket to Heaven.
And then we can talk a little bit more. So this is it billed as Curtis McCormick? Or?
Yes.
This is Curtis McCormick with Ticket to Heaven.
Hey, Cooper, did you get your ticket?
What ticket?
Tickets to Heaven.
Yeah, we all want
it. I hope so.
Tell me how to get you.
Passengers, coast to coast, it's all
Okay, that was just Curtis McCormick with some new gospel material he did called Ticket to Heaven. So is that released or it's just recorded?
Ron Cooper and I did that together. It's just recorded. It hasn't been released yet, but I'm trying to get it on the market.
Okay, well, people should look out for that.
Yes, my number is 773-708-6071.
And you play all the instruments on it, too?
A guy who worked with me, Jerry Knight, has his own studio, and we work out of that studio.
Yeah, it had a nice sound, like the instruments and everything. So, first of all, I got to say thanks so much to all of you for coming up and telling your story. Even though you only had one, like, hit record in Chicago, like, that record was really important to me. Like, it's just so Chicago-sounding. Kind of helped define the sound of Chicago in the early 70s. And one thing I forgot to ask is that record also got covered, right, by The Brighter Side of Darkness on their album?
Yes, they did. They did that unknowingly to us, Something to Remember You By, was out on their album through Clarence Johnson.
So when you bought the album, you were surprised to see it?
Yes, we were.
Okay, well, thanks again for coming up. Do you guys have any last words for the listening audience?
Yes, I'd like to say hi to my friend, Tyler Crane, who I hope to see him tomorrow in good spirits.
Okay.
I'd like to say hi to all the congregation of One Way to Christ Ministry. That's an awesome, awesome group of people. And we have an awesome praise team there and an awesome band there. People should come out and see us. We're at 1515 East 154th Street in Dalton.
Okay.
Nothing.
Either way, thanks for coming by. I really appreciate it. So the last record I'm going to play is the other side of the Notations record, which is really the first Legends record.
Yeah, I'm trying to lead on that.
This track is called Gonna Get Ready.